thing fully, eventually diminishing the child's ability to concentrate, control his emotions, think logically, and process social cues. An infant who is rarely touched or spoken to during the first weeks and months of life can suffer critical mental and behavioral impairments, even death. That is why the orphanage system, in which children are left lying in row after row of cribs unattended, has been phased out in the United States in favor of foster homes, which provide a child with the social and sensory nurturing he or she desperately needs. An infant lying in a crib in a sterile institution may compete with 40 other babies for the attention of a scarce caregiver. During the first weeks, the institutionalized baby will cry, but when no one responds, eventually the crying stops. Orphanage nurseries tend to be eerily quiet because babies there quickly discover no one comes when they cry. For these tiny ones, their earliest communications are effectively silenced. Instead of receiving reassuring and nurturing embraces from a mother, the institutionalized baby experiences the world as a cold and impoverished place. There is no affectionate sensory bath. There are few sounds, and whitewashed walls reduce visual stimulus. An institutionalized child misses out on a great deal and is at great risk. The legacy of early institutionalization. Early institutionalization can have lasting effects. One study showed that youngsters who spent their first 8 months in a Romanian orphanage remained smaller on average than children adopted at birth or home-reared, even when measured more than 6 years after their adoption. Orphanage-reared kids may show other problems as well. Their levels of cortisol, a stress hormone that can cause cell damage at continually high levels, was significantly higher than levels in other children. And the longer they spent in the orphanage, the higher their daily cortisol levels. At our own research lab, we surveyed a group of 86 families that had adopted internationally, primarily from Russian and Romanian orphanages. These parents reported that 23% of these at-risk children had been sexually abused before adoption. 47% were physically abused, and more than half were neglected by early caretakers. None of these children had been held during infant feeding, and less than half received any environmental sensory stimulation while at the orphanage. Now in an adoptive home, one-third of these children had developmental learning delays and were smaller in height and weight compared to their peers. Many had social and academic impairments. The importance of attachment. Child psychologists talk about attachment. This refers to the interpersonal bond between a child and his or her parent or caretaker. A child who felt consistently safe and nurtured by a reliable caretaker in early life will become securely attached. He knows that mommy or daddy will be there for him, and he is confident of a safe base to return to as he explores the world. A securely attached child learns to be comfortable in close relationships. As the securely attached child grows up, he watches how his parents handle new situations. If mama's voice stays calm and she is relaxed toward a new person or situation, the child will be quicker to accept that stranger or new environment as safe. Children raised in an impoverished orphanage setting without any primary caretaker at all can lack attachment skills entirely. These children may not have the basic moral compass that tells them not to hurt other people because they never connected closely with another person. They never got the lesson, "Mommy and Daddy respond positively to me, so I want to respond positively to others." Unattached children can display traits such as stealing, lying about the obvious, cruelty, and not making good judgments about friendships. In a home environment where parents abuse alcohol or drugs, an infant gets a confusing, troubling lesson in family relationships. This mother may be sweet and nurturing on one day, and on the next day she may be rough, neglectful, or unprotective. This baby will encode that humans are unreliable and untrustworthy, or should be avoided altogether. This creates a terrible dilemma for a child who is essentially helpless and cannot feed or care for his needs by himself. his hunger and need for affection will be at odds with the fear of disturbing an unpredictable or aggressive handler. Adopted kids who spend formative months or years in an impoverished setting can have difficulty attaching in a home environment. The second year of life. During the second year of life, a child tests boundaries. He or she instinctively tries to find out who is in charge. In a healthy home, a child's explorations will confirm that adults are in charge and trustworthy. With the guidance of stable, loving, and responsive parents, the child's brain can make profound leaps in processing language and social situations appropriately. If a child has neglectful or abusive caretakers, the youngster will soon learn to trust no one but himself. His social skills will suffer, and he will not learn how to respect boundaries. Deprived and harmed children may also face tangible physical dangers. For example, if an irritable caretaker tries to quiet a fussy baby by shaking or striking her, this child can suffer permanent brain damage. Research tells us that children who experience loss or rejection by their own families can feel concrete physical pain from that social exclusion. Children who haven't been touched regularly and safely may grow to be isolated and alienated from other people, and they may behave more aggressively as they get older. Understanding your child. If your special needs adopted child had been held often and affectionately as a baby, been fed and nurtured regularly, an early caretaker who was sensitive to his signals, an early caretaker who was respectful of his boundaries, an early caretaker who was interactive and responsive, your child would have become securely attached and able to bond and connect with his family, respond appropriately to adults, make friends and interact sociably with other kids, stay with a game or a task enthusiastically, learn and ask for help. To develop attachment skills, your child will need loads of extra affection and kindness, appropriate rules, structure, and boundaries, varied exercise and sensory enrichment activities, cuddling, feeding, and rocking, lessons in how families stick together, lessons in treating people with kindness and respect. The past affects the future. Healthy parental love, care, and attention from a child's earliest moments are vital for the child to develop in essential ways. Without close and nurturing contact from another human being, it becomes physically impossible for youngsters to develop optimally healthy bodies and minds. A child who missed out on nurturing from the start has an entirely different developmental trajectory than a youngster who never faced prenatal toxins or early starvation, isolation, neglect, abuse, or trauma. If these children had been cradled in their mother's arms, cherished and cuddled and well cared for from the beginning, they'd be well equipped to learn, love, and grow. Your job as parents is to help these children get what they missed before they came home, so they can heal and make the most of their own magnificent potential. Chapter 3. Solving the Puzzle of Difficult Behavior. Adopted and foster children deserve deep compassion and respect for what they may have endured before they were welcomed into your home. Some of these little ones have survived ordeals that defy the imagination. On a night while you ate steak and fresh vegetables, safe in your comfortable house, and enjoying warm conversation with your family, this child might have gone to bed hungry, dirty, and lonely, even rummaging in garbage cans for food. A child raised in a harsh or dysfunctional environment becomes a survivalist. He or she can't be expected to know the rules of family life or to have every intellectual advantage. The difficult history of these children means that you, as a caretaker, have to work harder to understand and address their unique deficits and make a conscious effort to help them learn the skills they need at home with a caring family. Certainly, your children may exhibit manipulative or assertive behavior, but instead of faulting them for it, respect that it enabled them to survive and cope in profoundly difficult circumstances. You think that it is a wonderful thing to adopt a child from a country like that. You know going in there are problems, but you don't have a clue what you're dealing with. You consult with professionals and finally realize that this little guy is just seeking and looking and disconnected in so many places. There are so many dynamics there that until you learn them, you can't help that child. As a parent, you do the best you can, but without knowledge, you are dead in the water. Mother of a child adopted at 18 months from an Eastern European orphanage. It can take time for adoptive parents to glimpse the full depth of the harm their child may have endured in his or her former life, and how it connects to the challenges he or she faces today. Adopted and fostered children can bring with them abandonment, loss, and grief issues, attachment dysfunctions, neurological alterations, cognitive impairments, coordination and motor skill problems, sensory processing deficits, fear, anger, flashbacks and post-traumatic stress, shame, anxiety, depression. Ironically, babies with the most obvious physical and mental impairments can fare better later in life because teachers and parents immediately recognize that something is wrong and make accommodations. When prenatal or postnatal damage is more subtle, the resulting impairments are harder to recognize, so adults are less likely to be compassionate and helpful about the challenges these children face. When your child appears physically perfect, it's easy to erroneously assume that his or her poor behavior is willful and intentional. Put aside your preconceived expectations about your child's behavior relative to his or her age. At-risk adopted children may appear to be a certain age physically, but inside they are playing catch-up, emotionally, behaviorally, and developmentally. They are still healing from old wounds that are invisible to our eyes. Not only have these children lost out on months or years of healthy developmental growth, but now they also have to unlearn the unhealthy strategies they've become accustomed to using. If you remain mindful of a child's unique history and how early growth was disrupted, you can even admire the strength that allowed this little child to survive adversity and have compassion for the ongoing struggles he faces. It's important to respect the neurological impairments and deep fear that drive disruptive and maladaptive behaviors. By gaining a deeper understanding of what motivates your child, you'll be in a better position to support your child's healing. Solving the puzzle. In Chapter 2, we looked at some of the points at which developmental problems can begin. Knowing your child's background is a good place to start pinpointing which problems may affect him or her. But it will also take detective work to sort through the threads of intertwined behavioral, physical, and cognitive challenges at play. The following sections give you further insight into the symptoms and challenges associated with certain backgrounds or disorders. Not every child will display every symptom, and there is overlap among these conditions. These lists are not intended to be a negative judgment on vulnerable children, but rather to increase your understanding and enable you to respond compassionately and realistically to the child in your care. Children raised in an impoverished environment. When a child faced early deprivation or impoverishment, his behavior and physical symptoms may include food hoarding issues and fear of starvation from not having had enough to eat, flattened back of the head from lying on his back in a crib excessively, crossed eyes from staring at the ceiling for hours, varying degrees of sensory processing disorders from lack of stimulation in the environment and lack of being held, lack of interpersonal bonding and attachment skills, lack of empathy for others because of a lack of a nurturing and attentive caregiver, self-comforting, repetitive physical behaviors such as rocking, stroking her own hair, thumb-sucking, keeping a binky with her, tapping an area of her body, which serve to self-medicate ongoing anxiety and compensate for lack of nurturing, holding, or emotional comfort. fearfulness of new places and people, which can be revealed in dilated or constricted pupils, rapid pulse, hyperactivity, running away often, being controlling, or speaking in a baby voice. People-pleasing behaviors, manipulation or triangulation, playing one adult against another to get needs met, which may be a habit for a child who had to curry favor to earn extra attention from orphanage attendants. Indiscriminate friendliness, approaching strangers inappropriately, which may be due to unmet needs for touch or due to lack of attachment. High threshold for pain, due to lack of attachment, sensory deprivation, and elevated stress hormone cortisol. Smaller height and weight than average due to early malnutrition or prenatal exposure to drugs or alcohol. Language processing and learning delays due to lack of attachment, sensory deprivation, or elevated stress. Hearing loss due to chronic, untreated ear infections. Sensory processing disorder. For children with sensory processing dysfunctions, the world is never safe or predictable. These youngsters live in a state of continual disorientation. It's as if they're perpetually going from sea legs to land legs, or are in a house of mirrors at an amusement park. The world is distorted, and cues are easily misread. Their systems are essentially miscalibrated from lack of experience. Some children react by seeking out more of a particular sensation. Others avoid that sensation at all cost. Some children both avoid and seek it. Children with sensory processing disorder are prone to delayed physical development or language skills. Your child may also be distressed by heightened or raucous sounds, reactive to perfumes and other odors, agitated by vibrant and lively visual images and scenes, averse to many tastes and food textures, awkward or fearful about moving or being held, clumsy, lacking balance and coordination, distractible or whiny, afraid of new things, often saying, "I can't," aggressive, often lashing out and saying, "I won't," unusually active or inactive, or both, prone to unpredictable outbursts or withdrawals, unwilling to wear certain clothes, unwilling to eat certain foods, oversensitive or undersensitive to touch, unable to participate in team sports, disoriented when their head is raised and lowered. You may notice that your sensory-challenged child uses fingertips rather than whole hands to manipulate objects, avoids or craves getting their hands dirty, has problems in using and coordinating both sides of the body, encounters difficulty in organizing academic tasks, copying from the blackboard or following teacher's instructions, is prone to hang limply in your arms like a little sack of potatoes when carried, has a behavioral meltdown just from getting bumped by other children in a line at school. Some signs a child suffered early sexual abuse. Parents may be bewildered by the behavior of a child who endured early sexual abuse. If your child was sexually abused early in life, you could encounter flirtatiousness or sexually precocious behavior directed toward caregivers or others, overt fear of being touched by one or both genders, as shown by jerking away when touched, fear of walking unaccompanied or being left alone in an unfamiliar place, infantile or clinging behavior. Symptoms of seizures. We have come to believe that seizures are often undiagnosed in at-risk children. Some symptoms of seizures are: the child gets a momentary, fixed glare or a blank, checked-out look, and then suddenly he or she is back. The child's head drops forward for a second and then returns to an upright position. The child's muscle stiffens involuntarily. It's typically spurred by anxiety and mimics aggressiveness. For example, when he encounters something deeply fear-inducing or frustrating in his environment, this type of seizure causes his arm to jut out like a punch. The child has a break in memory, such as leaving for school with a backpack and returning without it, but genuinely cannot recall what happened to it. The child's eyes roll back in the head and the body goes stiff. Some signs of fetal alcohol exposure. It is not uncommon to discover that a special needs adopted child was exposed to alcohol in utero. Significant exposure can result in Facial anomalies, such as eyelid fissures, absence of the groove above the mouth, and thin lips. Stunted growth and small head size. Structural malformation of heart, liver, or kidneys. Motor problems or seizures. Cognitive and functional impairments. Hyperactivity and learning disabilities. Some signs of early abuse, mental or physical. Harsh and abusive early caretaking can lead to a child who displays stunted physical growth, delayed language development, compulsive self-comforting behaviors such as sucking, biting, and rocking, hyperactive, disruptive, or self-destructive behavior, inhibited play and unusual fearfulness, clingy behavior, depression, low self-esteem, aggressive and demanding, controlling, or compliant and passive, dissociative behavior. Clues suggesting neurological damage. Neurological impairments can be caused by early exposure to toxins. Symptoms of this exposure include hyperactivity and attention problems. Other symptoms may include, when given sequential instructions, for example, write your name and then draw your picture, the child has difficulty following instructions, performing the last instruction given, and omitting the first. When asked to copy simple drawings of circles or hearts, the child draws convoluted shapes. When drawing a circle, the child draws a quarter circle, turns the paper, draws the next quarter circle, turns the paper, and so on. Fear is a powerful driver. As you'll learn in the next chapter, many aberrant behaviors are driven by fear and pain. Some children act out, externalize, when fearful. Others turn their discomfort inward, internalize. Some do both. Externalizing behaviors, acting out. Irritability, antisocial behaviors, anger, rage, aggression. Internalizing behaviors, acting in. Dissociation, withdrawal, crying, sadness. Lethargy, depression. What scares a child can often seem inconsequential to adults. For example, fear of rainstorms is very common in children who have been brought up in an orphanage or other institution. Being sent alone to a room can trigger panic in a child terrified of and used to being abandoned. A simple touch or hug can be overwhelmingly scary to a child who was never held or rocked as a baby. Holiday fireworks will threaten a sensory-deprived child whose early world was nearly silent and whose culture may not have had such vibrant celebrations. Without having lived these children's lives, it is hard for us to comprehend what they endured and what fears remain. Deciphering some examples of difficult behavior. A harmed child's behavior may seem mysterious, heartbreaking, and even threatening. It can be erratic, swinging from sweet to vindictive. You may encounter hyperactivity or inattention, aggression or withdrawal. If you forget where the child came from and how deep the impact of early neglect and abuse can truly be, you may be tempted to think, "My child hates me." But remember, inappropriate behaviors are driven by old traumas, neurological limitations, and the appropriate urge to survive. Many troubled, adoptive children don't yet have sufficient language to fully express themselves. They haven't grown up in a normal environment where they learn to modulate their own behavior. They are operating based on their own limited life experiences, complicated and compounded by their history and impairments. Here are some brief cases of difficult behavior, with the motivation for them explained. A girl adopted at the age of 9 puts her hand right in a hot frying skillet on the stove. Reason? In the institution where she grew up in Russia, this little girl was never permitted in the kitchen. She is unfamiliar with kitchens, unaware of the dangers of heat from stoves, and curious about how foods cook. A 7-year-old boy frequently walks into neighbors' houses unannounced and uninvited. Reason? This little boy lived alone on the streets and has no concept of private homes. The concept of nuclear families is foreign to him. A 6-year-old girl becomes angry, volatile, and distressed every time she gets close to a swimming pool or bathtub. Reason? She is having flashbacks that are causing her to panic because she witnessed her little sister being drowned. A 5-year-old girl and her mother are sitting in the car waiting to pick up an older brother at his school. The little girl sits quietly in the back seat until a fire truck pulls up outside the school building. The girl suddenly starts clawing at her mother, climbing into the front seat as if someone flipped a switch and made her go berserk. Reason? Her hearing is exceptionally sensitive due to sensory processing impairments. The little girl anticipated the pain that the fire siren would cause her and had an extreme fear reaction. Waiting in line in the school lunchroom, an 8-year-old boy is unintentionally bumped by his schoolmate's tray. In response to the bump, the boy punches his classmate. Reason? Deprived of physical touch during his early years at an orphanage in Romania, this boy still has sensory defensiveness. He perceived being jostled as combative aggression and responded accordingly. Tune in to your child. Play detective and watch closely for situations that trigger physical or behavioral reactions in your child. This will help you respond more effectively to your child's needs. Observe how your child interacts with individuals and the environment. Here are some specific things to look for. How does he respond in noisy situations? To quiet settings. How does she respond to being touched? Are there things he prefers to touch or not touch? How does she respond to the sound of your voice? To other sounds. What toys or activities is he most drawn to? Are there certain activities that she will abandon quickly? What distance does he choose for interpersonal interactions with you? Does she display any repetitive actions that reveal nervousness? Does his heart pound even when he sits quietly? Are her fists clenched often? Are the pupils of his eyes unnaturally large or unnaturally small? When does your child seem happiest? When does your child appear the most calm? What situations tend to trigger a tantrum? Does he show signs of depression or rage? Becoming attuned to your child is an important part of healing attachment-challenged children. Seeing beyond misbehavior. Children who act out may appear strong, but are surprisingly fragile inside. When their externalized misbehaviors are met with an assault of adult force, they come to believe that no one understands them or cares about their needs. This simply motivates further acting out. We always need to look beyond a difficult behavior and ask ourselves, what is the child really saying? What does the child really need? Behavior provides clues to the history of the child, his pain, his fear, his needs. Although we address misbehavior directly and quickly, we also must address it sensitively and responsively as a clue to the deepest needs of the child. Children who encountered deprivation or harm before they were brought home lack many types of connections. They can lack social connections, emotional connections, neurochemical connections, cognitive connections, and sensory connections. As a result, they easily become isolated in a world of their own. Our goal is to bring these children closer to us, into our sphere of warm guidance and nurturing care, so we can help them connect to their world and to the people who care deeply about them. Our intent is to see beyond maladaptive behaviors to the real child who has been holed up inside a fortress of fear. We use the term real child to refer to the core of highest potential inside a young person. It's always our goal to free up and reveal this magnificent inner core and to enable the child to experience his or her full potential as a loving, connected, and competent individual. Chapter 4. Disarming the Fear Response with Felt Safety. 6-year-old Janie didn't have much of an appetite during the day at school, but later, when her attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, stimulant drugs wore off, she would become ravenous. One evening she asked, "Mommy, I'm hungry. Can I have a snack bar?" busy in the kitchen preparing a large meal for the family, her mother replied, "No, sweetheart. In 10 minutes we're going to eat the chicken and vegetables I'm fixing for supper." Janie exploded into tears and began shrieking, "I hate you! I hate you! You are so mean! You are a mean mother! You never let me have anything!" The little girl ran into her bedroom, slammed the door, and began to sob loudly. Horrified, Janie's bewildered and disappointed mom couldn't imagine what had triggered the outburst. Disturbing behaviors, tantrums, hiding, hyperactivity, or aggressiveness are often triggered by a child's deep primal fear. Youngsters like Janie can be physically safe in their new adoptive home, but past traumas encoded within their brains are easily reactivated. Hunger, abuse, or abandonment that occurred months or years ago can still trigger terror, which in turn leads to out-of-control behavior. Chronic fear is like a schoolyard bully that scares children into behaving poorly. Parents might easily confuse fear-based outbursts with willful disobedience, but they are not the same thing at all. Deep fear caused Janie to explode into tears when she was denied the snack bar. To the little girl who spent a painfully hungry year in an orphanage, the promise of dinner in 10 minutes was no real comfort. She remembered going to bed hungry every night after orphanage workers ignored her pleas for food. Even though Janie's mom understood that good food was coming shortly and her daughter was in no danger of starving, the traumatized, primitive part of Janie's brain just couldn't grasp that. Starvation is encoded in her deepest memory. When refused a snack bar, Janie panicked, fearing she would die of starvation. Helping a child feel safe builds trust. You can take an important step toward eliminating tantrums and misbehaviors and enabling learning and positive family relationships by providing an atmosphere where your children feel and experience safety for themselves. This strategy is called providing felt safety. You provide felt safety when you arrange the environment and adjust your behavior so your children can feel in a profound and basic way that they are truly safe in their home and with you. Until your child experiences safety for himself or herself, trust can't develop, and healing and learning won't progress. How might Janie's mother have responded in a way that provided felt safety without spoiling her daughter's appetite for a home-cooked meal? Here's how. "Mommy, I'm hungry. Can I have a snack bar?" "Yes, dear, you may have a snack bar, and you may eat it right after supper." Mother puts the bar into her daughter's hands. "Do you want to put it beside your plate on the dinner table, or keep it in your pocket until dinner is over?" This simple act would reassure Janie in a visceral way that she won't go hungry. She still isn't permitted to eat until dinner time, but now she can touch the food and know it is hers to eat. Deciding whether to put the bar on the table or keep it with her helps Janie feel more in control of the situation and lets her practice self-control. Small choices like this are comforting to a traumatized child and build trust. Just to underscore the penetrating depth of food-related fears, consider that even as an adult, one highly acclaimed Academy Award-winning actor always carried a candy bar in the pocket of his suit, no matter where he went or what he did. He once fished it out and showed it to an interviewer during a TV show. His exceptionally impoverished childhood left him with such a fear of hunger that fame and fortune could not erase it, even decades later. When fear is in control. A fearful child focuses strictly on survival issues such as safety, hunger and thirst, fatigue, escaping scary situations, making hurts stop and go away, staying in control. A scared child cannot grasp discussions, sermons, or lectures, complex reasoning, logic, or stories, philosophical discussions or abstract concepts, solving puzzles or mathematics. The primitive brain's fight, flight, or freeze fear response can make a child run away and hide, lash out physically or verbally, get angry or cry, stonewall and become unresponsive, try to control the situation. Remember, fear will bully your child into poor behavior. Disarming the primitive brain's fear response. If a child feels threatened, hungry, or tired, her primitive brain jumps in and takes over. Physically located in areas of the brain such as the amygdala, this primitive brain constantly monitors basic survival needs and behaves like a guard on patrol. When the primitive brain is on duty, more advanced areas of the brain, particularly those that handle higher learning, reasoning, and logic, get shut down. Helping a child feel safe relaxes and disarms the primitive part of her brain. We purposefully soothe and disengage the primitive brain so it won't bully the child into poor behavior. When a child feels genuinely safe, the primitive brain lets down its guard and allows trust to blossom and bonding to begin. Parts of the brain that control higher learning can operate. Children who feel safe are free to heal and become secure, trusting children. Providing an atmosphere of felt safety disarms the primitive brain and reduces fear. It is a critical first step toward helping your child heal and grow. Chronic fear causes hypervigilance. Reducing fear can even minimize behaviors such as agitation and constant movement, similar to those seen in attention deficit disorders. We have encountered many harmed children who are not truly hyperactive. Instead, they are hypervigilant. This occurs when children were so traumatized by abusive and unpredictable caretakers or situations during their earlier lives that their primitive brain remains locked in a state of high alert, keeping them perpetually on guard. The fight-or-flight stress hormones continue to rage through their bodies and set these youngsters in motion, making them fidget endlessly, unable to sit still and focus on any single activity because they're constantly scanning their surroundings for danger. With careful observation, you can detect physical symptoms of hypervigilance, a state of chronic anxiety. The pupils, the dark centers of the eyes, are often enlarged in hypervigilant children, even during minor stressors or when a child seems calm. For other youngsters, the effect is reversed, making their pupils look unnaturally tiny. Either extreme indicates an imbalance in the stress response system. Other signs of hypervigilance are a rapid heart rate and a racing pulse. If you put a gentle hand over your child's heart when you speak to him or her, you can detect this. Some children's hearts beat wildly even while they appear to sit calmly in your lap. Building trust. Underneath everything you do with your children, you need to reduce their fears and convey the fundamental message that they are safe. Here are some tips. Offer consistent care so that your child gets the message that a safe adult will take care of me and protect me. My needs matter to this adult. Offer warm interaction so that your child gets the message that I do not need to be afraid of this adult. I am a person of value to this person. Be responsive so that your child gets the message that this adult understands what I feel. I am safe here. Earn a child's trust by showing emotional warmth and affection consistently, offering positive emotional responses and praise often, responding attentively and kindly to your child's words and actions, interacting playfully with your child, physically matching or mirroring your child's voice and behavior, being sensitive to your child's tolerance for sounds, touch, and personal distance, respecting your child's need for personal space, using simple words or language they understand, giving your child advance notice of upcoming change. I did the rounds of psychologists, neurologists, all the early childhood intervention disciplines, and everybody's got a theory. Everybody has an answer or a solution for a child that's hyper, and it might be medication or changing their diet or a program with occupational therapy. You go down all these paths that exhaust you financially and emotionally, and she's still the same way. I'm so astonished that I got to where I was, letting an at-risk, impaired 3-year-old run my life and my other child's life. I got in a pattern of making life easier for Cindy. I was thinking, I don't want to demand too much of a challenged child, so I kept lowering my expectations and widening the margin for her to fail. That loosened the reins on her, and she got more and more anxious and unable to focus. I'm very, very lucky that Drs. Purvis and Cross came in and said, "She can do better than that, and not with medication. She is capable of a lot more than I expected. Now I'm in control, and she trusts that I'm in control, so she has deferred to me. We sit and do things. We can play a game. We actually played a matching game. I was astonished. She matched up all the animals and patterned them and put them two by two into the ark. I've never known her to sit down that long. I am not joking. I didn't even know she knew her animals. What I've learned was that her endless energy was actually endless anxiety. Mother of 3-year-old Cindy and 6-year-old David, both adopted domestically at birth. Reducing stress improves behavior. Cortisol is a hormone that is activated by and responds to stress. Cortisol levels normally rise and fall at varying times of the day, but when children have too little or too much cortisol in their bodies over an extended period, it can cause serious problems. By helping your child feel safe, making his or her world more predictable, and teaching better coping skills, you can actually optimize cortisol levels and allow your child's brain to work better. We documented this effect in more than 50 at-risk youngsters at our day camp. Before attending camp, these children's morning salivary tests revealed twice the normal levels of cortisol, corresponding to their chronic experience of stress. During the first week of camp, their morning cortisol levels remained high. By the second week, however, cortisol levels had fallen by half, dropping to amounts considered normal for children of this age. Cortisol remained at this lower, healthier level until the end of camp, due to the reduction of stress. These children received no medical intervention. They were just actively engaged in a safe, playful, and multisensory camp environment that addressed their emotional and physical needs. Cortisol reduction was excellent news because chronically high levels of cortisol are actually toxic to the cells in the brain. An analysis of our research data showed that those campers whose stress dropped most significantly, as shown by significantly decreasing cortisol levels, also had the largest gains in language use. The comprehensive, receptive, and expressive vocabulary test results illustrated that these children did not suddenly understand more words. However, now they could communicate more. Certain children made stunning progress, gaining years' worth of verbal self-expression in 1 month of camp. We suspect that reduced cortisol is behind a great number of positive changes we have witnessed in campers, including spontaneous language development, regular smiling and joyfulness, better behavior, improved social skills, physical growth, and new attachment behaviors. Strategies that reduce chronic fear. Throughout each day, use the strategies in this section to help your child feel and experience safety on a deep level. Alert children to upcoming activities. Children with special needs feel safer when they know what will happen next. So make their world predictable by announcing or describing a task ahead of time. Prepare your child for what's coming up by saying things such as, "In 15 minutes, we will put away the toys and get your bath. In 10 minutes, we're leaving to go shopping. In 5 minutes, we'll get ready for bed." Before visiting a new place, such as a mall, tell your child about it. When you arrive, explain that there are many stores here and that you will be visiting one with shoes in it. By announcing your plans and explaining the child's environment, you help make her world less frightening. Important. Before you leave your child to go to work, on an errand, or for some other absence, remember to explain where you are going and when you will return. Details about your planned absence will reassure your child and reduce the possibility of an uncontrolled fear response. Don't try to slip away hoping to avoid a scene, because that strategy is sure to backfire and undermine your other efforts to increase trust. Your child simply won't feel safe once he discovers that at any time you might leave him without warning. Make their day predictable. In the morning, Discuss the upcoming day's schedule with your child. Better yet, make a chart that shows the day's schedule. You may want to attach pictures or photographs to explain each activity. This is particularly beneficial for a child who is extremely concrete in his or her thinking. Seeing a visual reminder adds to a child's sense of security whenever he feels unsure or afraid about what activity is next on the schedule. For flexibility and reuse, each individual activity can be put on a 3-inch by 5-inch card. Then affix the cards in correct sequence to the day's master schedule. It's also possible to make this type of index card and sequence them in a pack so your child can carry the cards with him and consult them as he goes through the day. It will reassure and remind him of what is coming up next. The benefit of using index cards is that you can include a wild card to handle unexpected changes. For example, if your child's schedule, that is, his group of activity cards for the day, included an activity that had to be canceled for some reason, he can plug in the wild card and get instructions on how to handle the disruption. The wild card might include these steps. We can breathe calmly. We can use our words. We can choose another activity. We can make a new plan. The wild card strategy is particularly beneficial for concrete thinkers. Similarly, visual aids, photos, drawings, and images are particularly effective for children with language and cognitive delays. To further empower your child, let him take the photos of places and activities himself or cut them out of a magazine and attach them to the card. Reminding your child what will happen next lessens his or her anxiety. Quick ways to help a child relax. Get down to her level physically by kneeling or sitting. Speak softly and gently in a warm voice. Offer a stress ball or a fidget toy that he can press and squeeze. Offer a piece of bubble gum. Chewing is calming. Offer a sweet sucking candy or lollipop. Sucking is calming. Offer to sit or stand farther away from her. Encourage him to take deep, slow breaths. Give appropriate choices to share control. Without relinquishing parental control, we can easily offer simple choices that make a child feel empowered and much less anxious. This has the added benefits of sharing an appropriate level of control and helping the child learn about choices and teamwork. We offer choices such as, would you like to wear your blue shorts or your tan shorts today? Would you like to play on the swings first or have your snack first? Do you want to use the pencil or the pen? Would you like to hold my hand or just walk beside me? Would you like to take a nap or simply rest quietly? Do you want to play football right now or do you want to take a walk? You can offer choices while making the child's world predictable. For example, if you go to a doctor's office, mark the task ahead of time by saying, in 10 minutes, we're driving to the doctor's office. Once there, identify your location. Here's the room where we wait for the nurse and doctor. Then offer a choice. Would you like to sit next to me or go over and look at the fish tank while we wait? Speak simply and repeat yourself. There are compelling physiological reasons why sermons and lectures are wasted on these children. The neglect or abuse many suffered early in life before they were adopted left them with language learning delays and difficulties processing sounds. That makes a steady stream of words confusing to them. Further, once a fear response is underway, your child's senses go into crisis mode, making involved discussions impossible. Imagine the impact we would have if instead of simply shouting, "Fire!" we yelled to a distracted adult, "On the second floor of my home is an old appliance that inadvertently was left on while my brother-in-law lit up a cigarette. The gas combusted, and now we have a life-threatening situation." Getting through to your child, who is controlled by his primitive brain, requires a similarly simple message. That's why throughout this book we offer short stock phrases like "focus" and "finish your task," "use your words," or "stop and breathe," that you can use repeatedly so they become familiar and meaningful to your child. Short phrases reduce auditory clutter and improve comprehension. To further aid understanding, you can reinforce verbal messages with facial gestures, hand movements, and body language. To create felt safety, speak slowly in a warm voice, use simple language, and have them repeat what you say. Be an effective leader. Children feel safest with adults who are kind but firm leaders. If a parent is indecisive and lets the child run the show, that's stressful to the youngster. He gets the unspoken message that he is on his own and has to fend for himself. After all, if his parents can't even control a little kid like him, they are bound to be ineffective in a crisis. Parents need to calmly demonstrate that they can handle whatever comes up. Here's some questions to get you thinking about whether you're being an effective leader. Do you follow through on promises? Your child's world is safe and predictable when you deliver on promises, whether it's a promise of sharing a game together or a promise that bedtime comes at a particular hour. If your follow-through gets lax, felt safety also melts away because your child just doesn't know what will really happen. This feels unstable and unsafe to your son or daughter. It's important to mean what you say and say what you mean to your child. Are you calm and patient? If you're as shrill and impatient,